Welcome, everyone, to the third episode of Triple Take. I am your host, Ryan Ortiz, and my co-host, Matt Morrow, is here with me. It's been 2 weeks now since our last episode. We wanted to give you guys an episode last week. Things kind of got in the way. Our guest that we wanted to have on really flaked out. He sucked. So we'll maybe have him again at some point in time later on. But Matt and I got the privilege to go up to a wedding up in Indiana, South Bend, Notre Dame, Fighting Irish. Go Irish. A couple weeks ago. That was actually 2 weeks ago. How was that, Matt? Wasn't it pretty awesome?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that wedding. It was, for those following the podcast, last time's guest, Tim Whelan, was the one getting married there to his lovely bride now, Erica. Yeah, it was a really, really great time. Just keeping the whole Triple Take family together, we actually, me and Ryan planned it out, flew in to met in Chicago, and then drove over from Chicago to South Bend for even more great times there. But it wasn't always all smooth sailing there. We thought we had this concrete plan all set up. We both landed in Chicago, and then I was trying to find Ryan for a little bit there in the terminal by the baggage claim, and we had a little bit of a mix-up there, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. So I don't know if anyone's ever flown into O'Hare, but it's set up in an interesting way where each terminal is basically set up with, a particular – it's like a web. It's like a big spider web almost where it has, different sections, and they're all kind of – they have their own individual baggage claims and all that kind of stuff. And I forgot – I don't know if I knew or even forgot, but I didn't realize what flight Matt was coming in on. Thought it was American Airlines because there happened to be the same – time frame of a flight coming in at the same place. So I went over to the American Airlines terminal, was waiting by the baggage claim. I sent Matt a message. I said, "Hey man, I'm at the bathroom on the way out of the terminal towards baggage claim at Terminal 1, which is the American Airlines, or no, Terminal 3, which is the American Airlines terminal. Terminal 1 happens to be United terminal." Matt gives me, "Okay, I'll see you there." Time goes by. Never see him. Come to find out, he flew United, and I went to the American one. So then I had to haul ass across the whole airport, come find him again. And then I find him, and I'm wearing just some joggers and a t-shirt, and the dude's decked out in a suit and a V-neck, like a Daniel Tosh V-neck underneath this suit.
Well, to be fair, that wasn't just for that. I'm a known proponent of only flying in suits. That's just the way I get it done. If I'm bringing a suit, if it's just somewhere entirely casual, I'm not going to have one there. I don't wear it. But if I'm traveling with a suit, wear it on the plane. You get treated real nice. I get put through TSA pre-check a lot with it, or you haven't been bumped up yet to a higher class. But I feel like it's just on the precipice of happening. Well, of really getting some nice free champagne up there with the rich people. So we'll see. That's definitely part of my plan. But yeah, we'd have a little bit of contrasting looks there. Yeah, it worked out. There was a little bit of confusion where I was just waiting for him, like, "Well, I'm right by the bathrooms." And he said one, like, baggage claim number 6. I'm sitting there because I also didn't know that there was just different whole baggage claim systems. I thought they would just number them 1 through however many you have in your whole arrivals. Now, they just restart those numbers every now and then just to rustle your jimmies real good and just really get up in you there, so you can't really plan things out too well unless you got, like, some MacGyver-type skills figuring everything outward. But your bags are coming in. So yeah, I was less than jazzed about that. But then got our rental car, MBD, drove over. A big point of tip I'll make on this. We were at the travel place, and they let you rent an iPass, or for people that use tolls, like iPass or, I don't know, SunPass in Florida, different things. The toll road thing you put on your windshield, and then you get the open road tolling, and you just pay as you load it up, and you pay, and you go. Anyway, that's not a novel thing, but they let you get one from the rental car place, and I'm like, "Nah, fam, like that's foolishness. I'm not going to pay this extra amount to have this and like load it up, because it's like $50 a day I'm like, or something for the trip. I didn't really pay that, so I'm like, no, I'll just pay the cash every time." Turns out you should definitely get that thing, because it was just hell on earth getting off the turnpike to go into this like little side pay area every time and pay like $1.50. You have all these quarters flying around your car. You're just jiggling like a hobo in New York with your cam in your car. It was a real mess. Really hated it. Really put a damper on a lot of the drive, having to embarrass myself frequently, be like, "No, guys, I got this," and just pulling over to pay the toll. Really quite terrible. All culminating in the end and having to get back into O'Hare, and the last toll is a coins-only $1.50 toll. Just kind of went right through that one.
We blew through that toll.
Well, you're just going to have to...
Yep.
And you're gonna have to bill me later for that one, because I don't happen to have, you know, 150 pennies on me right now.
And it wasn't just coins only. It was $1.50 in coins only.
Yeah, a bunch. And like they put it in. It was like, here's the you. It was even, they knew, like, it was like they were like making a joke out of themselves. Like the receptacle of taking it was like a big basket you throw the coins into. It wasn't like a slot thing. You just threw a bunch of coins in there, and just apparently that's what they wanted to have happen. I think it might have been a joke, in which case it was pretty funny. But yeah, that was big excitements about our travel plans, getting there and back. But yeah, the wedding itself, very nicely appointed. They got married in the chapel there on Notre Dame's campus. Very beautiful. We had some surprise guests we weren't planning on seeing there. From a couple friends of ours that didn't think we were going to make it and made it, so that made it definitely added a little bit for me.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, just okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That was taking up a lot of our past 2 weeks, and I have recently relocated from sunny Miami back to always raining and dreary and just like 50, 60 degree weather Michigan. It's significantly worse. But a pick-me-up, on the way back, I was able to drive up after I made it out of the 10-hour drive, it seems, out of Florida. Made it to Atlanta and got to spend a day with my lovely co-host Ryan Ortiz in his home there in Atlanta, and that was a pretty great time as well in the 2 weeks we had off. So we had some good fun here in this break. I'm forgetting.
Yeah, we did. We have a lot of fun, and you know, Matt came up and he got to experience what it was like to play basketball for a world-class losing team.
Yes.
We went out there. Matt came out. He was all jazzed to play. I was excited as well. I was actually so excited that I forgot my basketball shoes. Had to play in my running shoes. Awful time.
It was great.
And we ended up losing by, what, 30, 40?
They stopped the game with 2 minutes to go, so whatever score you feel like a ref or fan would go, I don't want to see this anymore, we're going to stop it, about that many points. I don't really remember, but that many where they just go, we don't need to see this anymore. This game is finished.
Yeah, with that said, though, we got our asses handed to us in the first half. Now, the second half went a lot better. Matt was pristine. He had this sweet high-low pass. Wasn't even looking. It was great. But the first half was terrifying, to say the least. I don't think I ever want to be in that situation ever again. It had shades back to a high school basketball team that me and my friends played together in, where we played. We joined a varsity practice league, and it was just us. And I was the only one who played basketball in high school, and we just made it. We made a squad, and we went in there. We didn't realize what we were getting ourselves into. We played an insane team the first week, lost like 87-15. It was brutal. It was shades back to that, and I don't want to have to remember that memory ever again.
Yeah, see, that's quite the different thing. What I remember in high school, I didn't play varsity or any level either. Got cut as a freshman due to my inability to make a jump shot or left-handed layups at the time. Really, really hurt me. But during all high school, they're called different things. You know, like it's called community ed where I was, the rec league, right? The intramurals for high school kind of deal. We had that, and my team was likely, I think, still will stand as the best or one of the best all time to come through the school. Had back-to-back titles, only lost 3 games over 3 years. So it was I wasn't ready for that kind of a return to general basketball playing. It was definitely a departure, but a great time nonetheless, and wonderful, wonderful company for Ryan putting us on there. Had a great time at the bars after too. We got a that was the one big plus too. We got a free pitcher voucher for being in the game that we were able to take to a bar after, and then have like 2 or 3 of those. The waitress was V nice and pretend we're all on a different team, so she had endless pitchers. So that was pretty great.
Yeah, it was nice to, you know, soak our sorrows away with beer, you know. Yeah, that's kinda how it goes at that point. They're like, here, you know, you got your asses handed to you. Here's some free beer.
Yeah. Just go find it.
Yeah, all right. Well, with all that,
but yeah, while we're at that bar too, we were able to watch a little bit of rain delay, but still get some Braves game, and that's going to tie us, you know, decent well to what we're trying to talk about here today. We're going to bring guys a little bit of baseball, a little baseball chit chat today. That's an average segue by me. I'm just trying to force it in there, getting us what we're talking about. It's baseball, everyone. It's America's pastime. Get your hands up and get excited. So it's about time. So Ryan, I know you got a a lot of thoughts on this. Give me a couple biggest surprises, one way or another, teams, players, anything. What's surprising you in the baseball world here in 2017 right now?
I mean, this season's been very interesting to watch so far. I think a lot of the things that have blown my mind are just certain teams outperforming what I assumed they would do and certain teams underperforming in a drastic way. And one of those teams that's kind of really underperforming for me, and not only, you know, not just for their – it's not all their fault. It's kind of one of their main pitchers' faults for dirt biking in the season. But it's got to be the San Francisco Giants. I mean, I did not expect them to come into this year and just look as bad as they have had. They're usually a team that can make it to the wild card, you know, spot, and then every, you know, other year win the World Series somehow. But for some reason this year, man, they just look awful. And I you know, it's been compounded with the whole Madison Bumgarner stuff. Hopefully when he comes back, things will look better, but I am not looking good for them right now at all.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants are definitely one you're pretty surprised of, too, because, you know, some teams it's didn't have as much turnover as you'd think you'd see from going from where they were, where they have been, to where they are now, right? Baseball is kind of one of those sports that things don't tend to change that much year to year with teams as quickly, usually. You know, unless you have a really old team that's declining quickly with age, or you got a really young team that's all of a sudden coming into their own. So yeah, I was pretty surprised too that the Giants are really
they're
kind of going down their leg right now to start this season.
They're 11 games out of the NL West. I mean, it's not something that I assumed I would be saying, you know, come early end of May, early June. I would have figured they would be up there with the Dodgers kind of battling out, but instead we've got a Rockies team that's just crushing it, and they're another one of the surprises for me that's kind of outperforming themselves. Yeah. I mean, look at their team, right? Their pitching has been phenomenal. They're the number four bullpen right now, and the number six starting staff based on WAR. So,
and I mean, their supposed ace to start the year, Gray hasn't been playing at all. Like, we thought was gonna be their best guy, haven't even had. He was doing okay before he went down with the toe, but like they weren't supposed to be good, then they lost their top guy. Yeah, it's real surprising. They've always had the hitting, and, you know, they got that ballpark fort where you need the good pitching, and it's fun to see.
Well, that's the thing, crazy, right? Because, I mean, the pitching, you know, when you play in a park like Coors Field, right, your pitching is definitely going to take a hit, but they've been able to sustain a high-quality level of output on their pitching level, and it's been shocking to me. Not only are they winning at home, but they're also winning away, which is something they were not able to do last year. Their away record last year was abysmal. This year, they're winning games away, and they're really showing teams. I think, honestly, the bullpen changed, because that's, you know, this day and age in baseball, your bullpen really can help you, because you don't see these starting pitchers going deep into these games unless they're the top aces, right? You're not getting these eight innings out of guys and where you're having your prototypical closer come in for an inning, shut things down real quick. That day and age of baseball is slowly kind of moving away. Now we've got this guys that are coming in for five, six innings, and then you're stringing together a bullpen that's got to play three or four innings a day and keep these runners off the bases. So for me, that's their biggest difference right there. And then another team over there in the West.
I just want to get out real quick on the Rockies too. Not really a huge surprise. He's been here for a while, doing great things. But Charlie Blackmon's still just really crushing it. He's leading the league in RBIs out of the leadoff spot.
Yeah,
and then 45 right now. That's not something you see every day. That's not something you see, you know, every decade. I mean, that's really shocking. You know, showing how well that lineup's able to turn over, getting top to bottom production, and letting, you know, the leadoff guy. Hitting 330, by the way, out of the leadoff spot, really, you know, crushing it. That's another, you know, piece when you have a guy who can, you know, start your lineup, get on base, and then bring everyone home when the bottom end of your lineup is able to turn over and get people in position. He's, you know, closing the deal. That's really how they're doing it, right? They're going just top to bottom, and they're running nine spots of danger right at you, and that's really, you know, been their calling card.
Yeah, and if Story can get going to the point that he was going last year, you know, we look back at last year's Story's start. It was you know, kind of similar to how, you know, the guys like Judge started this year, where they were just popping home, or Dame started this year, just popping home runs left and right. He's kind of been just so far, and it's been a little bit of interesting watching him. But if he can get going, that team is only going to get better. you know,
like definitely. I can tell you want to do right now. We're gonna do a special moment here for those that don't know. Ryan Ortiz, big Yankees fan. He just flew in Aaron Judge there. So, in the interest of not being inundated by just two monks, Brox, Bombers banter, Ryan, I'm gonna give you 90 seconds right now and tell me your favorite, biggest surprises about these wonderful New York Yankees and Aaron Judge. Here we go. What do you got?
So I think, you know, if you're going to give me the time, Judge has been a big surprise for me. The big surprise on his end is not the power. I know he's got the power, but it's been his plate discipline. The past couple games, watching him, seeing a little bit of a change, a shift. I think he's getting a little frustrated that he's not mashing the ball the way he was at the beginning of the first couple months, and he's kind of chasing a couple balls. But I'm confident he'll bring it back and all that kind of stuff. Another huge surprise has been, you know, even with the loss of Didi and Sanchez early on in the season, their offense had continued to just provide that top-notch run support, even for, you know, Hicks. Aaron Hicks was crushing it for him. And then finally, to keep it brief, Severino has just been unbelievable in the starting staff. You know, a staff with Tanaka that you thought would be your ace day in and day out type thing. He has been really rocky from place to place, but Severino has been just rock solid. His changeup has been on fire. He's throwing it with a lot more efficiency, and he just looks more confident on the mound. Pineda, I don't know. He gives up too many home runs. He reminds me of a Phil Hughes kind of guy in New York. I love him, but I don't know how long he can sustain the current trend. There's going to be a blow up at some point.
And time. Sorry, thank you there for all that. That was great. Great Yankees insight right there. But for everyone else, we're going to stop it right there and get back to the other teams in the league that don't play for the most storied franchise in history that's already had enough success. So let's just talk about something else now. Moving into the biggest surprises, and then that I saw too, and like kind of sadness. Again, it's another guy who was, to me, wasn't, you know, a surprise he was doing well, but again, how well he was doing. Freddie Freeman, before the injury, was down there playing for a Braves team that was doing a whole lot of nothing, but he was doing a whole lot of something. Leading the league in home runs. By the time he went down, I think he had, to show how poor the Braves were getting guys on base ahead of him, I think had 13 home runs and then only 11 RBIs on top of that that weren't accounted for in his home runs. So of all this hitting he's doing, guys hit over 300, mashing, you know, 13 home runs, and then there's only 11 other times that someone was on base able to get hit in by him. So that's really a tough break for him. Surprising in both ways that he's doing so well, and then even how well he was doing, just nothing else going on for him down there. They're still obviously clearly in the rebuilding phase, and now that he's in the DL for the next month or two, that's really going to hurt their chances down there in Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, he was putting together a beautiful season. He was striking out a lot less than he was last year. Mm-hmm. His ISO was through the roof. It was right up there with where Trout's at right now. I mean, he was putting up Trout-esque numbers. And right. To see a guy go down like that in a, you know, hit by pitch type thing is really rough to watch. It's kind of like when Giancarlo went down, you know, when he got smacked in the face. And, you know, you hate seeing players go down like that because he was having himself a special year. And I think he could still continue that special year. But the question is going to be, how is he going to come back from that wrist? Because a wrist is something that's, you know, from someone who myself, I you know, when I played baseball growing up and I had a bad wrist break in middle school, to this day, I still feel the effects of it when I swing a baseball bat. Now, granted, he's going to have a lot more, you know, high-end doctors, physical therapy, looking at this type of thing. But still, that's a really lingering issue to kind of have to deal with for a slugger and a guy who relies on hitting to generate pretty much his team's runs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the, you know, his numbers. I mean, he had 14 home runs and 25 RBIs before he went down. So, I mean, he was just like literally their offense. And Matt Adams is not going to be able to take over that for them. And we knew the Braves.
Oh, maybe don't count out Fatty Matty too soon. He's still the best player. You know, he's like the back. He's the epitome in baseball of the backup quarterback thing. You know, the best player on a bad team is the backup QB because you haven't seen what he can do yet. Matt Adams has been that guy for years with the Cardinals. Oh, he's pinch hitting, hit all these home runs. Maybe he's gonna be great now. So,
dude, Matt Adams maybe. Got a chance. Matt Adams he's had chances. I don't see it happening. He's gonna give you flashes.
Out 400.
He's gonna give you flashes of home runs, but he is gonna strike out way more then he's going to hit home runs. And that's just going to be the problem for him. It's like watching Chris Carter. He just strikes out all the time. But with that, I mean, you know, even rolling that kind of into, you know, the Braves, it's been an interesting thing with them. I mean, they're, I think, what, 9 games out of that division right now? But outside of the Nationals, they're like, what, in second place or tied for second place with the Mets? Oh, actually, I know. I think the Mets lost last night. So if the Braves lost too, then they're right around each other, like 8.5, 9.5 games out of that division. And, I mean, I don't think either of them are going to catch up to the Nationals because, you know, the way Harper's playing and the way that team's constructed compared to the other ones. And we knew going into the season the Braves were in a rebuilding situation. But that's that division's been very surprising to me, and more on a Mets-centric line than on a Braves-centric line, because just the Mets, the way they've dealt with their players across the board, you know, we had the whole Syndergaard thing where, you know, the guy denies getting an MRI. What are you doing from, you know, a management standpoint to allow your player to say, no, I'm not hurt. I don't want to take an MRI. I'm going to go out and pitch. And then in that next game, blow out his arm, and then now he's on the 60-day DL and all this kind of awfulness. And I feel awful for him. But at the same time, I'm like, come on, man. You know.
Well, you got, and it's not even just that, right? You had the Matt Harvey thing where he just wasn't prepared to show up. He couldn't be there. A lot's going wrong with that team. Not in the same vein, but in the same idea of Mets woes. You've had Cespedes spending like over half the season so far on the DL. Various
stints. Last night, I was watching the game, the Met game. You know, they were up 4-2, and then they, you know, talking about Cespedes, right? He was supposed to have a rehab start. He played in a rehab game, and then now he's got quad soreness, right? So it's, you know, maybe it's just baseball soreness. Maybe it's, you know, he hadn't been running, he hadn't been doing that much work. Now his quad's a little sore. Maybe he needs a day or two off, and he'll get back to it. Maybe not. That's the question right now. But the thing for them is they don't need another outfielder. They need a pitcher. Their pitching has just been decimated. They just called up the Tyler Pill guy. We'll see if he gets a
start.
And
we thought, you know, two or three years ago, that was supposed to be the Mets are going to be, you know, the kings of pitching for the next, you know, 100 years. You know, we had Harvey, we had Syndergaard, we had everyone. They got DeGrom. They had everyone, right? They had everything.
And DeGrom's pitching fantastic. I mean, DeGrom is still having a pretty good year. Wheeler looked good last night. Their bullpen blew the game for him. Russell came in the 9th, blown save. They lost in the 10th. I mean, they were up for – they had the win, and their bullpen blew it. And, you know, Familia's hurt. So that whole team is just kind of it baffles me sometimes when I watch it. And I feel bad. You know, even being a Yankee fan, I feel bad for them.
And there is a guy though they have, I know we both enjoy, that's really having a breakout year for them.
Mm-hmm. I'll say it. Say his name.
Michael Conforto.
Yep, there he is.
He's really crushing it this year for him. He's a guy that people have thought for a year or two, college guy, you know, has like the tools to do it. Just how many years is it gonna take? Apparently no more years. Apparently it's just right now. He's raking his OPS up over 1,000 still. He's really putting together quite a time for him, and a time, you know, when Cespedes is down, Granderson, the decline is in full swing and may be gone forever now. He might, you know, be about out of the league. He's not doing anything.
He's heating up a little bit, but yeah, I agree. He's at the point in his career where he's kind of, you know, on the tail end of it.
Former Tiger great, had a lot of love for him. Love me some Grandy man.
Fordo needs to be an everyday outfielder for that team. And with the money that they're paying for Granderson, for Cespedes, when he comes back, the question is, where are they going to put him, right? Are they going to kick out one of them to play? I agree. I mean, he is the future of that outfield. He has insane power potential. He's getting great contact on the ball. He's the kind of guy you can build your offense
and
around.
And left and center. One of them too. Either way you flip it, that's fine.
They're dealing with all these injuries. I mean, if we look across the board for the league right now, you know, we had this switch from the 15-day now to the 10-day DL, and it's changed a lot of things across the league. Not just from, you know, a league standpoint, from a fantasy baseball standpoint. I mean, if looking at number wise, right, just. In 2016, we had 475 unique players go to the DL. So, I mean, they could have went multiple times, but that was a unique name right there, right? So far in the first 2 months of baseball, we've had 291 go to the DL on a unique name basis, right? So we're almost at that 300 mark, right? And we're only about 180 something players away from reaching the same number we got from a full season's length. And, mm-hmm. and teams are using that DL now in a completely different way, because especially from a pitcher standpoint, right?
So, yeah.
Because that 5 days, right? It's like you basically only have to miss a start.
Exactly.
And you can kind of rotate. It was almost like the Dodgers were doing that early in the year, right? They were just kind of like rotating guys, you know, off on and off
the
DL. You
pull up the DL, you pull up your guy from AAA for a few games, right?
To get some extra rest early on in the season.
And because of the 10-day two for pitchers too, and some players, they've been, you know, they missed 2 or 3 days in a row. You put them on it retroactive. Now they come back in 10 days. You don't have to send them on their rehab assignments. Seems like to me have been less. People have been, you know, coming right back from the DL on the team, traveling with the team the whole time, as opposed to, you know, in the past, or the 15-day DL, they're on it for like, you know, 15, 20, and then they're doing their rehab assignment for a week or two. Now it's more like you're out for 10, you know, backdate at like 5, and then you're right back with us. It's like an extended rest, and it lets them get that extra positional, the roster position movement to like keep their team afloat while this guy's getting up a little over a week rest. Yeah, it's really changing how teams are doing it. Seems to be changing how it's affecting. It's got to be, clearly it's helpful for the team. I think it's much more helpful when it's shorter like that. They can move it easier on their rosters. But like you alluded to a little bit, or getting into for fantasy purposes, for those that play that, it's really changing that game up a lot as well.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of guys are hitting the DL. Which, you know, to be fair, just it changes it up too. Like we were saying, like it cuts that off. So someone misses 3 or 4 or 5 days, they're going to put them on the 10-day DL, of course, at that point, because there's only 5 more days, where in the past they probably wouldn't have put them on the 15, and they maybe could have come back at 7, right? It just kind of changed it. People seem to hit it and come off all the time. So managing a roster where you want to have guys on there, and you have 5, it's not uncommon for many teams to have 5, 6 guys in the DL, and you got to decide, well, like who do I hold? Do I have to just drop this guy so I can get, you know, the at-bats or the innings pitched I need to have to be competitive in this league? And, like, looking at what other people are doing, like, are they holding? Are they just dropping and running through healthy guys? It's having a lot of change. It's really going to affect strategy going forward, both on the fantasy side, for those that care about that, and in the real life with the roster turnover. It's really affecting, you know, how many bodies, MLB-ready bodies you need to have. Because now, with guys hitting the DL this often, you got to carry a few more guys at AAA or your AA that you're ready to pull up and can contribute right now on an MLB roster, where in the past, you know, you didn't have as many people that you're likely cycling through, where now you have a lot of guys that are touching the majors going back, a lot more shuffling, I feel. It's just, it's really different. Kind of like it, but it's definitely different.
And not only that, with the whole, you know, bring up people, down people, you know, you only have so many options on these players, right? So that really mm-hmm. limits you. It's also going to, you know, bring us a hefty, maybe have a much larger price tag on these players that can play multiple positions across the field, right? If you've got guys who can play infield, outfield, and be able to produce at that level of effectiveness, you know, let's say your left fielder goes down. Okay, well, I can move my third baseman back there, and then I've got options at least. I don't need to have to, you know, call down to the minors and hope on some young guy to come up and fill the shoes of a guy that's been producing for me. I already have people at the major league level that I can just kind of now shift around and play around with. You know, you see the Cubs are able to do that with a lot of their players, kind of move them around. And that ability to do that, you know, the utility man, they've always had their place in the MLB, but it's like they're having a much higher place in it now. You know, you got to be able to be able to shift. And if you're able to tell your manager, hey, listen, I can play any position, they're going to have you on that roster. They're going to have mm-hmm. that spot for you. Right, so that's going to be interesting to watch.
At the Cubs, right? You have the Cubs. You got your Zobrist, of course, the guy who's been there for forever. That's known for that, right? Playing the middle infield through the outfield. Javi Baez can play pretty much everywhere for him. They got guys who can do catcher and outfield for him. You know, the defending World Series champion. You know, they're kind of, you know, ahead of the curve on this too. They got a lot of guys that can play all over. I definitely agree. You should see a shift towards that. You know, guys like Mike Avilas, known for being able to play, you know, pretty much everywhere on the diamond. Shout out back in the day, makes me remember guys like Brandon Inge was a Tigers guy that mm-hmm. I think the last guy in the MLB to play every position on the diamond at some point during one season. You know, guys like that, you know, it's pretty impressive to be able to do that, and it creates a, like you're saying, if you're not going to be an everyday starter perhaps, then, you know, you don't just do what everyone else does a little bit worse, do something different. Be able to play everywhere. Be able to do everything or a few things, right? Don't just be, oh, when your shortstop goes down, I can play you some shortstop. Be, you know, play everywhere on the infield and then a corner outfield maybe kind of thing.
And then it even kind of gives us a little bit of a glimpse forward to the situation we're seeing with Ohtani out in Japan and then Hunter Green, you know, the prospect that's coming out of high school right now. These guys that can pitch, and then they can also crush the ball from a hitter standpoint. Teams are not going to maybe have it even start seeing players able to play both positions from a pitching and a hitting standpoint, and how are you going to manage that, right? Are they better suited for the AL? Are they better suited for the NL? Personally, we can go into a long conversation on that. I'm just saying those are the types of things now that are going to be kind of being – baseball is going to be shifting and these top talents that we know and love are going to kind of give us – just more to watch and more to fall in love with. I think that kind of, you know, goes, you know, right into the guys that year in, year out are for the past several years at the top of the league. And you know, with that, I want to bring in our guest for this week. Very knowledgeable guy on baseball. We're going to kind of hit at some MVP Cy Young conversation. And then a little bit of a talk. We're going to keep that one for the end. We'll go at. But before that, let me bring in our friend Hector Reyes. How you doing, Hector?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on today.
We appreciate you for joining us. So we've kind of been hitting at a lot of the things. And where we're kind of going with now, let's talk some MVP Cy Young conversation. I mean, in my opinion, right, we've got the AL MVP, I think, is going to be a no-brainer with Trout. Looking at his slash line, the dude is just insane. He's got a 401 or 410, 401, I can't remember, ISO. He's got 60 points higher than the next best, basically. He's slugging 739. I think last time I checked, he was slugging better than the rest of his lineup had an OPS. So the man is just a one-man wrecking ball for that team. He's high for the home run lead. He's probably going to be at the top of it come the end of the season. I just don't see how this man doesn't pull out another AL MVP.
Yeah, I've got Trout as my AL MVP as well. All those stats that you listed as well, the guy's already accumulated 3.6 wins above replacement at this point in the season. Which is significantly higher than, I believe, the second place player is in the NL. It's Bryce Harper with like 2.7.
2. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's insane. It's an insane increase.
It's ridiculous how well he's playing. And the fact that the Angels, having a player like that, still don't have the, you know, that high of a level of a success, you see just how valuable he really is to that team. I think that goes a long way too.
I mean, they're in second right now, and they're what, 9 games behind Houston, I think. But
right,
their team itself is just not comprised to go the distance. And even with a guy like that, that's the difference between baseball and you know, like a sport like basketball, right? Like, you know, you can have a guy that can go out there and win games and just dominate the league, but it's still a team sport at the end of the day, and you need a lot more than just one man. But man, that one man can make a difference and take a team that probably without him would be seller bait, and they're, you know, still in contention for potentially a wild card spot if they kind of get rolling in the summer months.
Right, and he's definitely. I mean, the Angels in general, players like that, you want to see what they can do in the playoffs and stuff. So, you know, we can hope that one day they'll actually give him the chance to show us what he can do in October, because it's clear the dude is the best player in baseball.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's doing it year in, year out.
Even getting better every year, right? That's something crazy about it, too. He's been the best player in baseball probably for the past 3 years, maybe four. There was that, you know, Miguel Cabrera was there in the AL, too, for him. We had a triple crown year, took away an MVP from him. But Mike Trout's been the best or one of the best pretty much since he came in. And his numbers have gotten better every year, you know, really showing. That's pretty exciting to see, too. It's a guy, you know, not just a flash-in-the-pan guy, hasn't had any down years. Like, people are saying, oh, he's not in his prime yet, and some people laugh, you know, not, oh, I'm sure he's pretty close to his prime right now. He's showing that he's still improving. He has levels yet to reach and get there, and it's, you know, it's really exciting. You know, it's, yeah, who else are you going to pick at this point, seeing what you've seen there? You gotta go Trout, right?
Yeah, and you know, you look at Trout, and then you look at his counterpart across the league. You know, the young gun. For me, right now, my NL MVP is gonna be Harper. You can make an argument maybe for some other players, but I think he's having a year right now, and he's showing teams. You know, look at that Nationals team. He's taking that Nationals team up a notch. He's crushing it. He's also tied with Trout for the home run lead. He's slashing impressively as well. That's my MVP pick on that side. What about for you guys?
I actually, you know, I was between two guys, Harper being one of them, and maybe it was for the point of discussion. But I've got Paul Goldschmidt.
Goldie? Okay, right, that's the next guy. I feel like you can pick one of them too, basically.
At this point. And you know, both of them, you really can't go wrong with either option. They're both having ridiculous seasons. Goldie, he's got, I got this off of Fangraphs. He's got 2.6 wins above replacement. He's on a 30-30 pace, like 30 homers, 30 steals, which from a replacement is
insane.
A third. Like, you just don't see that.
Big guy too.
To top it off, the Diamondbacks, you know, they're actually. They're having a fantastic season so far. They're at a 31-20 record, and part of it's been the return of Zach Greinke. You know, last year definitely did not go how that team wanted, but he's been pitching well. But Goldschmidt's just been that rock for that team. You know, they've got a strong lineup around him, but he's just that guy that every single day you know what you're getting out of him. He's been one of the most consistent players in baseball for years now. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, given the team's success and the season that he's having, he's definitely in there for that NL MVP discussion. That's who I would pick right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're both having pretty great years. I mean, they're, you know, this is, again, we're talking a month in, so this is, of course, you know, qualified as the way too early MVP discussion talk. But, yeah, it is showing, they're both great choices, and because, like you had mentioned, the Diamondbacks having such a great year and the Nationals having an even better year, they're doing very well on teams that are doing very well, you know, which is really impressive. That's what you want with your value, right? You want a guy that's contributing heavily in the number stats and his team still able to win games is good. I feel like sometimes in baseball it's valued a little bit less how well your team's winning because you can break down, you know, it's very much a team sport, but it can also be very individual where you can say, how is this guy doing on his own for MVP looks, which is basically what you have with Trout a lot. You're like, well, even though his team isn't winning, this man clearly is the most dominant force we're seeing. So in baseball, it changed a little bit that way, but it is great to see that they're both having such great seasons, and it's helping, you know, lift their teams to such great heights. The Nationals have been there. We've been kind of, a lot of people have been saying for a few years, like, oh, you know, the Nationals are going to do it soon. They've got all these great players. This is the year the Nationals are going to not blow it. And they keep blowing it, but hey, maybe this is actually the year. You know, Ryan Zimmerman's back and he's a real human now, hitting the ball fine. So yeah, both those teams I think are pretty fun to watch. Helping the Diamondbacks wins too is what I just heard again right now. AJ Pollock really being back really helped. You know, Goldschmidt being able to drive in those more runs, having, you know, AJ Pollock and Peralta ahead of him, you know, able to get on base a little more, helping his ability to have these kind of numbers. But yeah, I hard to argue with either of those two guys right now. I'll pick Goldschmidt right now, though, just for fun. Because I think that sounds like a more fun pick for me right now.
I think going forward it'll be interesting. Like you said, we're only 2 months into the season. There's a lot to go by at the rest of the year. It'll be interesting to watch that division, and especially from the win standpoint, how Goldie can carry that team. If they got right now, they got three teams in that division that have 30 wins, 30 plus wins. Yeah, the Rockies, they're all the Dodgers, Rockies, and Diamondbacks are all around the 30 win mark. You flip that to the NL East. And there's no comparison when it comes to the division race there. So if the Diamondbacks can take that division race and run away with it, and Goldschmidt's at the helm and leading it, then, you know, hats off to him. Yeah, the man deserves it. Right now, we'll see what happens with that. But you mentioned Zach Greinke, so that kind of brings up a good point to hit to the pitchers and to Cy Youngs. We could stay in the NL. I battled on my NL Cy Young conversation. I thought about taking Greinke. I like what he's doing so far this year. I'm hesitant to say that he'll continue doing it for the full season because of what happened last year. I'm not quite sure. I'm sticking with the safe pick on saying Kershaw is going to take it, just because the man is above and beyond, insane year in and year out. It is interesting though that his home run fly ball rate is up from previous years, and pretty significantly up. So he's given up the long ball a little bit more, but he's still being able to go out there and just kind of cruise through teams. So for me, in the NL, we could make an argument for maybe Kroenke. We can make an argument for a couple of other pitchers, but I think Kershaw is going to come out on top on that one.
Yeah, I agree. I've got Clayton Kershaw as well. The man is just at this point, you know, he's one of the best pitchers of all time. I think you can assume when he's going out there on the mound, you're going to get somewhere from 7 to potentially a complete game that night of 1 to 2 runs given up. When you've got that you can count on, it's just it goes a long way, because you put up 3 runs, you've got to win when he's on the mound. And he somehow has managed to refine his game as the seasons have gone on. He's not striking out as many batters as he normally does this year, but his walks are also significantly lower. He's walking 1 batter per 9 innings, and he's striking out just a tick above 9. So, like, a 9-to-1 K-to-walk ratio is just – it's ridiculous. Like, pitchers shouldn't be able to have that kind of –
no
command.
They
it's not there for the hitters. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got Kershaw, and like you said, there's some arguments that could be made for a few other guys, but over the course of the season, I just don't see how anyone's going to be able to compete with him, at least in the NL. Yes. AL's got a few guys that I think mm-hmm. can go toe-to-toe, but NL Cy Young, I think it's Kershaw hands down.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what I got too. It's kind of the similar thing. It sounds like a bit of a cop out, kind of like saying, you know, Mike Trout's your, you know, batting MVP, or saying, you know, yeah, maybe LeBron should be your NBA MVP. Like, he's the best. He's the best in the league right now as a pitcher. Maybe the best all time, and he's having another good year. I mean, yeah, that's my guy too.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Pretty open and shut for me. No, too much to say on it.
Yeah, nothing really. You can kind of go with that guy. You mentioned the strikeout rate. And mm-hmm. and for me, for my guy, for the AL, and like there could be conversations there. We had Keuchel. He's playing at a premier level this year compared to the previous year. But for so far, and I hate to say it because the way the team he plays on, but I have to pick Sale right now. Uh-huh. And the reason being, I mean, look at – he's got a 12.45 K-9 ratio. His home run fly ball ratio is down 4 points from last year. He's got a 1.8 FIP. And the crazy part is the Red Sox right now are 13th in runs scored. They're not hitting the way that a lot of people thought they would come out of the season hitting. They're starting, you know, last night I think they put up 6 runs. So they're starting to get their offense going. I mean, they no longer have Poppy. They no longer have that big but they've got guys there. And when that team starts to hit that stride in the summer months and he starts getting that run support, his win count's going to go up. And I hate to kind of argue over the win category, because I'm not a huge fan over it, but it seems to be brought up every time when it comes to Cy Young, you know, how many wins did he get? And, you know, I think for him, you know, compared to like a Keuchel over in Houston, that team's just winning and winning and winning. But for the Sox, they haven't started out that win right now. I think he's 5-2. They're going to hit that point come midsummer where they're going to be hitting their stride. I'm worried about them creeping up on the Yankees. So for me, Sale's the guy. He's a freak strikeout machine. What more can you say about the guy?
Yeah, I've got the same pick as you here. Chris Sale, just you went over the strikeout rates and the ERA, the FIP are very impressive. And you know, the statistics are one thing. You can definitely judge a player by that, but even some of the outside stuff, you know, it's his first year coming from relatively more low-key team in the White Sox, you know, mm-hmm. going straight into Boston, throw in the fact that David Price got hurt.
Yep.
So there's so much pressure on him to show. I mean, they've got Rick Porcello, Eduardo Rodriguez, a few other ones. But, you know, as far as that ace status goes, there is so much pressure from the Boston fans and the Boston media on Chris Sale to really come in and deliver from day one. And he clearly hasn't disappointed. I'd say he's done better than anyone could have anticipated. He's a freak. And like you said, there's a few other names. Dallas Keuchel's had an incredible season, but someone that's more dependent on, like Keuchel is, on, you know, the defense behind him and things like that, I could just see where that could. I don't think it'll go badly for him. I think he'll still end up with a fantastic final line, but Chris Sale with those strikeouts has so much more control over the final results of his pitching. And I think that's just what's going to sustain those numbers for him. And he'll just end up winning the AL Cy Young. Like you said, wins aren't my favorite way to judge a pitcher's results, just because there's so many other factors that go into that. But once the team starts hitting around him, he'll have that argument going for him too. And, you know, the voters will, you know, they'll give it to him at the end if he keeps this up.
Yeah. And on that Keuchel note, right? Like I think his left on base percentage right now is 87%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's up from 68 last year. I mean, last year he didn't have a fantastic, I mean, but like 87% is not sustainable. Even, you know, the year where he was dominant, he was at 79%. So, like I said, he's relying heavily on that defense. He's relying heavily on players not they're swinging at balls outside of the zone for him, game in, game out. And as players adjust to that, his strikeout rates are going to go down, and we'll maybe see some of his success go down. I don't think he'll be at the level he was at last year. I think he's going to normalize kind of back to where he should be, you know, in like the 2.5 to 3 ERA area, nowhere near the 4.5 ERA that he had last year. But I think there's going to be a little bit of regression come the summer months for him. Could be wrong, though. You never know.
I mean, yeah, I'm a just throw my quick, I got to say Sale, too. But a name that is really surprising that you could even mention it, I don't think he's going to get it. He's got a lot of regression to come. But a guy, Irvin Santana.
Oh, God, yeah.
Is coming in this year. A guy, you know, been around for a while. 1.8 ERA, a whip of like 0.8. I mean, and even, like I said, talk about depending on defense, he's only got, he's got 50 Ks on the year and 70 innings pitched. So he's not striking that many guys out, playing on a Twins team that's somewhere on the south side of not good. So, I mean, that's just another guy that's really surprising, you know, kind of fit in here and, you know, could have mentioned in the, you know, big surprise story, but I want to save him and mention him here in the possible Cy Young because, I mean, realistically, yeah, you can mention him here.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about him that's crazy is his BABIP is like 136. So He's getting guys either to get like really crappy soft contact on the ball all the time, and he's getting either that, or he's getting really, really lucky. Because I can't imagine that he's going to have that kind of luck going through the rest of the year. I've loved it, man. But you look at his comparison between his ERA right now and his FIP. His ERA is 1.8. His FIP is 4.0. So.
Right.
Where's the dividing line there with Irvin? I think he can come out there and be a really solid man. And boy, if he came out and pitched the way he's the rest of the year, man, I would love that. But you know, kind of, you know, to wrap the whole thing up, just about pitching and about hitting in general, right? We're seeing, you know, we threw out these numbers with Sale and with Kershaw, even with a 9-1 ratio. Guys are striking Keuchel. These guys are striking out at an inordinate rate. And then on top of that, they're hitting the ball out of the park in a crazy rate as well. I mean, we started off the season, Dames was knocking the ball out of the park, I feel like, every other day. Judge was doing the same thing. You know, Trout, Harper, they're all just crushing the ball. But we're seeing a crazy increase in strikeouts. Just looking at, you know, the numbers so far. Right now, we have an average home run per game of 1.22. Right, last year's was 1.16, and the year before that was 1.01. So we're getting a pretty steady increase year in and year out, and we're getting pretty high. And then we look at the K side of it, we're getting about average eight Ks per game right now, 8.19. Last year, 8.03. The year before that, 7.71. So every year we're just going up. I mean, what do you think is going on with baseball to see such an increase in the home run strikeout ratio there?
Well, I think there's a variety of factors here. Listening to what coaches and players talk about as far as the home runs go, there's clearly been a shift in mentality on player swings and what their focus is on. Obviously a home run, it's a guaranteed run right there, you know. And things like focusing on your launch angles and researching things like exit velocities, you're starting to find out that players, you know, are using this information to their advantage and, you know, trying to angle their swing in a way that they're going to drive the ball further. Add into that the fact that defenses are shifting so much more. You see it, I think, a lot more often with left-handed hitters. I know Freddie Freeman faces that extreme shift that Poppy used to get very often. And I think a way that players are trying to counter that is simply hitting more fly balls to beat the shift, because going the opposite way is a lot more difficult. Going the opposite way and hitting it hard is a lot more difficult than hitting fly balls. And by hitting more fly balls, I think that's one of the reasons that you're getting all this increase in home runs.
Yeah, but the thing that's crazy, right? You make the comment, right? A home run, that's a guaranteed run, right? But then you flip that. A strikeout's a guaranteed out. Nothing good can come from a strikeout. You hit a fly ball, you can maybe get a sac fly. You hit the ball on the ground hard, you could see an error somewhere. Putting the ball in play leads to so many more possibilities than literally a guaranteed strikeout every single day. So it's kind of interesting where you're seeing these guys like, oh, yes, we want to make sure we can get these guaranteed runs. But then you're like, no, I want to make sure I'm getting these guaranteed outs as well. These guys are just swinging through the roof at everything.
Yeah, I think I know some people have tried to find how obviously a double play is worse for your team than just a strikeout, because you're generating two outs right there. But
I don't see the odds of the double play happening every single time that it's in play is not. I'd rather go for the chance of maybe a double play and maybe the ball sneaking through a hole than seeing my player strike out. Oh, now I got two outs. And then, you know, whatever happens next is pretty much a much lower chance of anything good happening from it.
I agree. I think there's diminishing returns at some point with this. Like, I do think it's something that players should focus on. Just the general idea of hitting the ball harder.
Right.
That's going, if you look at hard hit percentage and all that, it's going to result in more extra base hits. And with these shifts and just the smarter defense that teams are throwing out there, your best way to counter that is going to be hitting the ball harder, just because it's getting more and more difficult to just rely on hitting it where players aren't standing. You've got guys that, like Kevin Kiermaier or Jason Hayward, who are just freaks and can cover so much ground.
Kevin Pillar.
Or Steven Sousa, right? Yesterday, you know, he covered all that. He covered 73 feet in one jump, MJ
that,
style.
That was one of the oddest things I've ever seen. But yeah, I think the home runs and the strike, you know, I think players are focusing on trying to hit the ball harder. They're being more aggressive in that sense, and it's going both ways. And I think what you're saying about you know, the guaranteed outs, I do think there's a point where it's just simply too much. What you're being too aggressive, you're swinging too hard, whatever it is. And I think at a certain point, it'll start trending backwards a little bit once they find that sweet spot. I think, you know, the trend has been happening for a few years now, but if you compare it even to other sports, like the NBA right now is seeing that explosion of three-point shooting.
Right. Yep.
And the NFL has seen an explosion in the passing game.
Yep.
And these things are all still very new. So I think, at a certain point, you're going to hit a wall with your results, and you're going to see it trend backwards as players kind of start developing all the skills again, rather than just
how can we score as fast as possible and put up as many points as fast as possible? And that's going to be true across all the board.
Here's something I wanted to bring up. It's a little, you know, little bit rumor, speculation, tinfoil hat type thing, but I've heard it, seen it from a few sources, some players, some mixing, saying with the league, you know, you're talking about the NFL, they went more passing. Well, that was able to be done because the DBs got to keep their hands off now. They're changing some of those rules.
Yep.
NBA three-pointers, you got to keep your hands down. More free running on the perimeter. You can screen harder and get off those for 3 points a lot easier. And you can get to the rim a lot easier, so you got to give people more space, easier threes. Anyway, how I'm tying into baseball, this one's much more crazy and less proven, but there's been a decent amount of rumors about juicing the baseballs.
Really?
And that I like, or not even juicing so much as changing how they're made a little bit, and that's possibly the balls we're getting now tend to have a little more loft to them.
Well, even
and you guys think anything with that, or you guys, that's totally crazy.
I'm not sure on the loft part, but I've heard the conversation on the strikeout standpoint, where, you know, comparing the balls. I think a lot of Japanese pitchers that come over to the bigs, they have a stark difference in Japan. The balls are kind of coated in a more like a stickier substance that gives the pitcher a little more grip. In the MLB, we don't have that. And we have that whole kind of like pine tar situation where we're not giving mm-hmm. the pitchers that ability to get that grip. So I could see maybe something's getting on the ball in like a substance way to, like, you know, give pitchers a little bit more of a command on the ball. And then that's leading to a higher strikeout. I don't know about the juicing part of it for the home run standpoint. That would be kind of wild. But hey, you know, you never know. I mean, home runs sell for the games, right? They sell tickets.
That's what I'm saying. As long as the MLB doing it and they're doing it for everyone, I honestly don't have a problem with it. Just don't tell me. I don't want to see how the sausage is made. But I mean, if you decided, yeah, we're going to leave it looks the same on the outside, but the inside's got some tennis ball in it, I mean, I don't care. That's great. Just make it the same for everyone so it's fair and it's a more exciting product and it's just, you know, a little more, few more home runs. So the guys are swinging harder to try to take advantage of this new ball kind of thing and Kane more. That all works for me. You know, that's just, you know, changes of the game, you know, getting the points on the board.
Yeah, I think the entertainment value of home runs can't be understated, especially in person. Like, nothing beats that crack and watching the ball just fly. Yeah.
Some of these guys, you know it from the minute it hits off that bat. Boom.
Right. You see the bat flips and all that. And I genuinely love that. I like that it's adding personality to baseball just because I think it's been dragging a bit in that sense. But my worry about that is not just these two things, but walks are also it's, you know, they talk about the three true outcomes, home runs, strikeouts, and walks. And my only worry is that at a certain point, if it just gets even more extreme than what it is right now, that baseball will legitimately turn into a game of just those three outcomes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think that would be good for the sport. I think, you know, there's plenty of other I love seeing great defensive plays. I love seeing guys like Billy Hamilton stretch out triples. But another thing that can go into it that I'm not sure how exactly you can quantify this since the stats are changing across the league, you know, so much, but there are some people that think, for as far as the strikeouts go, that pitchers were simply getting more talent into the league and that these pitchers are just better than what we have had in the past, and that could be one of the reasons.
That could very well be true.
I mean, you got guys like Kershaw and Sale who, I don't know, I could see them succeeding in any era of baseball, but, you know, that's something to think about. And the other thing is, I don't know, do you have any thoughts on how these types of skills are going to impact player value? You know, I know earlier you guys mentioned with the disabled list, guys that can play various positions are going to become, there's going to be a premium on those guys. Do you think, or how much do you think that's going to impact player contracts and that type of thing? Guys that maybe can hit homers and aren't striking out as much as they're,
I think you'll see that a stark difference there. Cause you know, we watched this off season, right, real quick with guys like, you know, think of some names, you know, Chris Davis and Chris Carter, people who Carter put up 40 home runs last year. He only got a $5 million contract. Teams, you know, these first basemen that are sluggers that strike out a ton, they don't really want to give them as much money as they did in the past. And I think we're going to kind of see a shift in that. Now, if players can start walking more on top of that and hitting the home runs, that's when they're going to start seeing the sweet spot. That's where you're going to get the premium. And the same thing comes with pitchers, right? You know, are pitchers going to be able to, you know, we're seeing a very high jump in relievers that can go in there and blast 98, 99 miles per hour and strike guys out. And those are, people are paying at a premium for them. We saw the two trades the Yankees did at the end of the year last year to the two World Series teams, right? And they paid high level prices for those guys. And we're seeing similar types of contracts giving out when it comes to free agency. So I think when we're going to start seeing these specialties and strikeouts and home runs, it's going to have a direct relation to player contracts, player value. Management's going to be looking for that type of person who can do it, but not and not only do it to a way that helps the team, but a way that doesn't hurt the team at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And you've definitely, like you mentioned, Davis and Carter and you know, the Yankees deals. There definitely has been a a growing emphasis on that kind of stuff. I know a lot of the you see a lot of trades, even on the in the minor league level, you see a lot of teams trading for these guys that are very raw, but they're putting up crazy power numbers or crazy strikeout numbers. And I think the teams are thinking, you know, we can groom these guys, we can develop them. And if we can kind of, you know, even out those bad parts of their talent, you know, yep. These guys are going to be huge impact players going down the line, because that's just the way the league is heading now.
Yeah, it's insane, and I'm very excited to see, you know, where the league goes. I'm excited to see how the season finishes out, and I would love to kind of come back at it in future, kind of like maybe around the All-Star break, just kind of relook at, you know, all these stats and things like that, the things we talked about today. But with that, you know, I think we've had a great talk so far. Fantastic having you on the show, Hector. Fantastic talking to you again, Matt, for the weeks off that we've had. Really, really enjoyed it. I hope the listeners have enjoyed it as well. Any final words on your guys' end?
Just, you know, thank you for having me again. Hopefully we can do this sometime soon and see how much of our predictions end up being wrong.
Yes.
I'm sure that's what's going to end up happening at this point.
Yeah, we know it. Alrighty, with that, I will, you know, bid you guys farewell. Have a good Memorial Day weekend, and peace out.
Two fingers.